Do not attempt to change the channel.
All media are extensions of some human faculty.
Is books part of the media?
Media, we don't need it, do we?
Baby, this thing is bigger than all of us.
The media. A lot of you out there probably never even heard of the word.
Media is any form of communication. It can be radio, television, computers.
Welcome to the internet, my friend. How can I help you?
You know, we live in the most mediated society in world history. You spend 10 to 12 hours a day with media. And so I think it makes sense to think about, in a sort of systematic and sustained way, our relationship with media.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Be the Media here on CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. It's a pleasure to be here on this lovely Thursday afternoon, a little bit gray outside, but not too bad. And here we are on Be the Media. We talk on this show about all things media. We go from the local to the global, and we include perspectives of consumers and producers of media. All contributors of Be the Media are faculty, students, and friends of the Media Studies Department and Media Research Lab at Vancouver Island University. I'm Marian Vanderzon, and I'm here in the studio with Neil Scobie. On today's show, first up, we are going to start with the next installment of Kevin Mazutenik's Paparazzi Trigger Finger. And this is a 5-minute segment of fictional work. Then we're going to move into a live interview. We'll be interviewing Paul Manley. Paul Manley is an independent documentary and filmmaker. He lives in Nanaimo. And we're going to be speaking specifically about the nonprofit society called Mid-Island TV. And Mid-Island TV is a nonprofit society that Paul's involved in getting off the ground. So we'll talk about that, the importance of community media in television and beyond. And then we'll move on to the 7th installment of Robin Davies' Excerpts from the Oral Machine. Once again, you're listening to Be the Media, and this is Kevin Mazutenik.
Even a rainbow is capable of blocking the path to enlightenment.
I'm Kevin Mazutenik, and welcome to Paparazzi Trigger Finger. At the sound of the turning page, we will begin a new fiction.
Failed safe. Page 52. Away. I'm late, and he's waiting. Impatiently. But not half as impatiently as those who are waiting for us. Physiological limitations. That's my excuse. Well, that coupled with a shot of fear, which is generally quite effective. You just really don't want to get caught out at the top of the teeter-totter as your proponent bails out at ground level. Right. The gaggle of giggling females have congregated only steps from the door of the men's room. Like that's not intimidating. Perhaps one day I will take perch outside of their powder room. I'll just bring a chair and stare unblinkingly at the triangular skirted silhouette on the plaque on the door as the coked-up little bitches prime themselves for the next... Wait. I promised myself that I wouldn't get like this. Calm blue ocean. Calm blue ocean. Calm blue ocean. Okay. Better now. Where was I? Normally, I find the soap provided in the communal washrooms to be insufferable, but lately they've made a significant advancement in publicly distributed toiletries. Foam soap has now become commonplace. I quite like it. Not so messy, and it provides a small degree of fun in my life which has never existed before. Chalk up one more for Colgate Palmolive. The synthesized tea tree aromatic qualities are lost on me at this time. It has less to do with the unapologetic odor power of the urinal cakes and much more to do with the health break snack shared by the ladies out waiting. I'm really trying here, but the smirk-slicing daydream of a source swap of these mingling vagrant synthetic fragrances is as uncomfortably pleasing as it is fiendishly repugnant. I simply cannot stand microwave popcorn. Orville Red and Butterfingers echoes through my brain as I pay for the private pleasure of the previous thought. Here I stand, crotch soaking wet, slick with a foam soap saturated watermark lovelessly drawn into my pants from the unwiped Arborite countertop. I am pleased by the charcoal chamois pattern chosen by the upstart designer who has selected it to effectively camouflage the humbling, ego-shattering pools. Voodoo in the Hoodoos, page 87, chapter 5. Small, wet, chirping sounds break the monotony of the blistering desert afternoon. The awkward timing of these little noises produces an inconvenient rhythm seemingly set to counter the steady beat established by the drops of perspiration falling from Coda's elbows down onto the sand below. "What is it that you're doing to chirp make all those noises, Alistair?" Chirp inquires. "Chirp what?" Chirp replies Coda. "That chirping. You mean this chirp? This is chirp, the noise I mean. It chirp happens, chirp, chirp, when I press the soft flesh of my palm, chirp, into my eye socket." "Oh, chirp, and why would one do that, chirp?" "Well, chirp, if you get it just right, chirp, chirp, you can see all sorts of super chirp, intense chirp, colors, chirp." "Hmm, chirp, and if chirp one was to get it wrong, chirp, it's easy, chirp, go on, give it a try, chirp." Alistair takes a deep breath, closes his eyes, and grits his teeth, cracking grains of sand between his molars. His split lips slowly tear open to hiss his words. "Even chirp, even a rainbow, chirp, chirp, even a rainbow is capable of blocking the path to enlightenment."
Thank you for tuning in, and once again, this is Kevin Mazatenik from Paparazzi Trigger Finger.
Ready on Vision and Sound. Vision and Sound are on. The station goes on the air.
Taken from the film Television Comes to London. That's just a quick score we grabbed off of YouTube, but just sort of encapsulates what the wonderment of television was like for people in the 30s there. Produced by the BBC in 1936 from Television Comes to London. And next up, Marion, take it away.
Thanks very much, Neil. Yes, we've come a long way in television, and Well, maybe for the better, maybe for the worse. We have on the line with us today Paul Manley. Again, I'd like to mention Paul Manley is an independent filmmaker and documentary maker. He lives here in Nanaimo, and today we'll be speaking about the nonprofit society called Mid-Island TV. Paul, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Paul, let's start. What is Mid-Island TV?
Mid-Island TV is an independent society dedicated to production of community television in the Mid-Island area. So we mirror the Shaw catchment area for Central Island, which goes from Duncan up to Parksville, Qualicum, and over to Port Alberni. And our objective is to create programming for the Shaw Community Channel, as well as for posting on the internet, and for Novus, which is the TELUS community service.
Okay, so I'm going to interrupt you here, because for the layperson out there, they may not know about the fact that as community members, they are to have some access to these resources. So how does that work? How does the whole access to Shaw and also the TELUS portion, how does that work?
Well, I can dig back a little bit in history, because everybody's, you know, familiar with the old model, you know, the Wayne's World model of community TV, and you know, most people in this community are familiar with being able to go into your community television station back in the 80s and the 90s and being able to volunteer and work on programming or develop your own programming and having that kind of access. And it was a very welcoming and open situation. In the late 90s, in 1997, when satellite competition came in against cable, the CRTC, the Canadian Radio and Telecommunications Commission, deregulated the cable channels, the cable community cable stations, and they relaxed the rules that the cable companies had to follow in terms of providing that community access. And what happened was that the volunteers were told they weren't needed. A lot of the volunteer coordinators were laid off. The community stations professionalized. They hired more staff, and then they just or work with the existing staff, and they created the programming and just repeated it over and over again. And, you know, there's different situations in different communities about how good that programming was, and in many communities, people lost their community channels. And in communities like Vancouver and a lot of communities in Quebec, programmers fought to keep their access. So over in Vancouver, Sid Tan fought to keep his access to the community channel, and lobbied the CRTC to re-regulate, to allow, you know, to make sure that there was the mandate was firm, that the community had access to these channels, because we pay for, you know, we provide a levy. Every cable subscriber pays a levy that pays for those stations. The cable monopoly uses right-of-ways on public land to run their cables. The broadcast, the airwaves, belong to the public. That's all public property that is used by telecommunications giants, the broadcasters, the cable monopolies, to send us the signals and the content that's created. And as part of that deal, we're supposed to have access to a community cable station.
Is there a certain percentage of, like, do we have a certain percentage in terms of our access?
Well, there's the rules are that the community cable station, so here in Nanaimo, they have to have a minimum of 30% local content. And that can go up as high as 50%. The threshold is 50%. So once they reach that, they can say, well, we've got enough community content and we don't need to add any more. You know, because one of the things that's happened more and more over the last few decades is as more programming's been regionalized, and especially since 1997. So, you know, we're getting shows out of Calgary, showing here in Nanaimo and out of Victoria and Vancouver. And so there was kind of a regionalization. And some communities that don't even have a community access station, they get all their programming from some other center. And this has happened everywhere, all across Canada. So, you know, if you go into the outback of Ontario, what you get is a lot of programming from Toronto on the community cable stations. Right. And
it's not as relevant, of course.
Yeah, and it doesn't really fit the mandate of a community access station.
I mean, and just to be clear, this 30% local content, that doesn't mean that it has to be community produced.
No.
Yeah.
You know, when you send a press release to the community station, in a lot of cases, they'll claim that going out and producing that content or covering that story is community involvement, right? So they can put a little check mark on,
right.
You know, that was community, that's community access. You send a press release, they cover your event or your story, and that's community access. But really and truly, if you look at the CRTC regulations, it says that we have access to training and equipment at the community cable station, and we have access to broadcast time.
And so at this point, you would say that that's not being used?
Well, I just, at this point, I would say, you know, it's being used to a certain extent, but it's very much an inside game.
Okay.
And in Nanaimo, it's, you know, not necessarily a really bad situation here. We still have our community cable station. I've submitted stuff to it before and not had a huge problem getting things played. But in other communities, that is the case. And you know, one of the things I did as a filmmaker was I made this film about the Security Prosperity Partnership, where at the end of it, I talk about how, you know, if we're going to have a strong democratic system, we need community access to media. Mm-hmm. We need to be able to, speak our minds, share our ideas, and we have a lot of corporate control in our media systems. And that control has been consolidated, you know, more and more. And so there's less diversity of actual voices being heard. You know, we get a lot more programming, a lot more stuff on TV, but a lot of it's the same old, you know, like reality TV or whatever. It's all based on kind of a voyeurism or we've lost a lot of the educational component to television, and we've lost a lot of the community component to television as there's been a consolidation process. So we've seen, you know, a lot of the local stations just getting more centralized programming as well. So, you know, I went across this country talking to people about what they can do in their local communities, and there's a lot of discussion, you know, about how we don't have access to the media. But here is an example of a space that most people don't realize that we have access to. And so part of this is an exercise in community building. It's getting people in this community to realize that they do have access and that we can do this together. And as a society, we can claim up to 20% of the broadcast time on Shaw Cable 4. We're not ready to do that. I mean, that's a far off kind of fantasy of being able to produce that much content. And I don't necessarily think that we will do that. You know, who knows what we might do in the future. But the thing is that we do have this access, and when we work together, we're able to get better access. You know, so having a society means that we can end up getting guaranteed times. We can, whether Shaw, the local community folks here, if they produce, you know, 50% local content, then, you know, some group can go in there and say, well, I want you to cover this. And they say, well, we've already reached our 50% threshold. We don't need to provide any more time.
Right.
But as a society, we can, it's mandated to us. Right. So they can't refuse to give us time up to that 20% threshold. unless there's other societies here that are vying for that 20%. And in the Vancouver market, there's I think 5 independent community TV societies over there.
Okay.
And so they get a maximum or a minimum time allotment of 4 hours a week. That's the minimum.
Right. So bringing it back to a local context, the Mid-Island TV Society would be used, well, one, as an organizational tool to so that people would know where to go in terms of gaining resources, training, and then also so that they can more easily get on Shaw's airwaves, for example. But it's also about access to information and letting people know that they too can produce television media.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things we should be talking about that aren't being talked about on television.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that used to happen on our community channels that aren't happening anymore. You know, for instance, a really good example is all candidates debates. You know, we used to have all candidates debates on community TV. And that meant that people who have, you know, barriers for getting out to an all candidates meeting can turn on their community cable station and watch it. And or watch a repeat of it later on and see what the candidates are saying and see who showed up to that meeting and who didn't. And that's a really important, you know, part of our democratic system. But the other thing is that we have, you know, for municipal elections, and I know this because I ran, but I've seen how it's operated before, you get 90 seconds to explain who you are and do your candidate profile and what your platform is. Well, 90 seconds isn't enough time to even start talking about some of the issues we face in this community. And so
it brings us back to the soundbite model rather than actually getting any depth into anything.
Yeah, and so here's an opportunity. Like this is an outlet that we can use to provide a better platform for discussion in our democratic system and also to give more in-depth analysis. I mean, I've done lots of television work. I graduated from broadcasting almost 20 years ago, and you know, I've worked on series, I've worked on all kinds of different things, but I've also done lots of community TV. And when I moved back to Nanaimo, I started doing. I had a show in Victoria years ago, you know, after graduating, regular half hour on environmental issues, and I wanted to do that here in Nanaimo, and I was told that I couldn't, but I could submit segments to the Daily, which is a series of shorts, and you know, it was kind of maximum 3 minutes, you know, try to keep it down to 2 if you can, but you can't explain you know if you're going to do any kind of balance too, you can't explain you know, some of these issues in that amount of time. And so it can be frustrating in that way to delve into you know, some contentious things.
Mm-hmm.
A little more deeply and to be able to explain to
Absolutely.
The audience what these issues mean.
And this is certainly a larger movement in our media generally to bring things down and have less time rather than to have the time to provide context.
Yeah.
So let's, Paul, let's move outwards and then come back specifically to Mid-Island TV, to a local perspective. But you've clearly stated that this is a problem that applies all across Canada. And I know that there's an organization called CACTUS, Canadian Association of Community Television Users and Stations. And they're working on this similar issues across Canada. What are they doing and how does that relate to what you're doing then with the Mid-Island Television Society?
Well, I'm a member of CACTUS, and I support the work that they're doing. You know, one of the main things that they're doing is they're lobbying on behalf of community station users, you know, across Canada. So they compile what the issues are. So if I have a problem here with getting access, then that I send that information to them. That becomes part of a file that then goes forward to the CRTC the next time Shaw is looking to renew their license or the next time the CRTC is looking at changing the policy. So they lobby on our behalf, on the behalf of communities across Canada for access to these stations. But they're also looking at a different model of, you know, what can be done with this levy that is collected. Every cable subscriber pays 5% of their cable bill to a levy, and that pays that is divided. So 3% just a little more than half of that 5% levy goes to the Canadian Media Fund, which is a fund that you can get money for from if you have a broadcaster behind a project. So if I can line up a pre-broadcast license for a documentary I want to produce, and I've never been able to do this, I've had broadcasters buy my films after I've finished them, but I've never managed to get the pre-broadcast license. If I can get that pre-broadcast license, then I'm eligible for those funds from the Canadian Media Fund.
Right.
The other 2%, so that's a difficult pool of money to dip into, and it's basically controlled by the broadcasters and the cable monopolies.
And just to be clear, Cactus is working to loosen that up so that it can also be applied for by community producers.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the other part of it is 2%, which goes and pays 2% of that 5% goes towards the community stations. And Cactus has a proposal that they want to take that money out of the hands of the monopoly, the cable monopolies, because in a lot of cases they've abused those stations and shut the public out and made it difficult for the public to get access to the stations and have censored people. They want to put that into multimedia, multi-access centers, you know, so rather than having, I don't know what it amounts to here per year, probably about $500,000 in the Nanaimo catchment area. It adds up to $116 million a year, that levy, that part of the levy that goes towards the community stations.
So it's substantial.
Yeah, and so what their proposal is to put that into media access centers, so multi-platform access centers. So, you know, if you had an organization in Nanaimo similar to Vivo, Video In, Video Out, which is an artist-run center for people making video and audio production, and you know, take a group like that.
And just to be clear, Vivo is based out of Victoria.
Oh, Vivo's out of Vancouver.
Oh, sorry, out of Vancouver.
Yeah, there's MediaNet in Victoria, but the idea is to take the resource, the different organizations in a community. So here we would have Mid-Island TV, CHLY, if there was a film co-op here, something like that, you know, have that money go towards a multi-access center to serve, you know, all those different community media outlets. And
so in a sense, it's centralizing the resources as well, in terms of training and the community resources, I mean.
Yeah.
In terms of equipment as well as training.
Yeah, it would that's kind of the proposal. I think it makes a lot of sense for a small market like this to share resources and, you know, share space and all those kind of things. But to be able to access that money is, you know, a key way to make that happen. And so that's part of the Cactus proposal for a new model.
Okay. And so that's what Cactus is working on federally.
Yeah.
And coming from it from that perspective. Okay, so let's come back now to Mid-Island TV. When did you get started with this initiative, with this nonprofit society?
When I put my first email out this fall.
Okay, so it's still fairly new.
It's very new, yeah. I just got my society papers back yesterday.
Oh, fabulous.
In the mail, yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
So what's your plan from here forward?
Well, what we've done is we've been developing, of the people that have shown an interest, we've been developing production teams. So a lot of people have come forward with ideas about the kind of programming they'd like to work on. And then there's production teams that where people have equipment, access to equipment, and the ability to produce content that has high production values that would work well on TV. And we're just matching people up. So some people have ideas and equipment and know-how, and they're just working with other people to help facilitate that. And then other people have ideas and other people have equipment, and just putting those different groups together. We've also been requesting training at Shaw, so some 25 people have signed up with Shaw for their orientation and training for their equipment so they can access it. And so I think we've overwhelmed them at Shaw a little bit. But, you know, that's what happens when people start to understand what they do have access to.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are positive things.
I mean, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, yeah. We certainly need more community media, not less. And as you say, it's especially important in today's, well, increasingly corporate world, and as we see things moving more and more in that direction. So that's fabulous that Shaw's feeling overwhelmed.
Well, and the other thing, too, is that, I mean, they should look at it in a positive light, because if there's a lot of community involvement in the community channel, those people are going to subscribe. And subscription rates for cable have dropped. You know, they're going down, 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 because there's all these other ways that people are, mostly through the internet, that people are accessing content. They can access it, you know, directly from the broadcaster's website. There's things like Netflix, YouTube, all that, you know. So more people are cutting off their cable and just moving to direct internet access. And, you know, this could be a positive thing for cable in Nanaimo, actually, for Shaw. So.
Well, I think you're right. I mean, if people are locally invested in the stories that are happening, then, yeah, again, that grows outwards, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for folks that are hearing this and are getting inspired and who might want to get involved, how would they do so?
Well, at this point, we're still working on a website, so we don't have that up yet, but it's going to be Mid-Island TV, and you'll be able to punch in .org, .net, .ca, or .com, because I've reserved all of those, and they're all going to point to the same place, but not until we have a website. In the meantime, they can get in touch with me. That's the best way to do it, and so my email address is paul@manlymedia.com, and Manly does not have an E in it. It's M-A-N-L-Y, media, M-E-D-I-A. com. And we've been putting up some samples of different things we're working on a YouTube channel, which is Mid Island TV on YouTube. And at this point, we're just favoriting stuff. So there's, because there's three different sort of production teams that have been putting things up on their own YouTube sites. So,
great, yeah. And okay, so again, the folks can access the YouTube channel, Mid Island TV,
yeah.
And then also you specifically through email, paul@manlymedia.com.
Yeah.
Great. Is there anything else that you want to say about Mid Island TV or beyond, Paul?
Well, I would just encourage people to get involved. I mean, the and people who are already working on, you know, blogs or radio or other things, you know. When I used to do those short stories for the Daily on Shaw, I used to change the ending of it. Instead of it saying on Shaw, this is Paul Manley, I'd say on CHLY, this is Paul Manley, and I'd submit it to CHLY too.
Sure.
And it just meant that it went farther. And so, you know, here's another outlet for people who are doing citizens journalism and you know, trying to reach out. Like, there's a lot of people that are digging into different issues. And here's another outlet for you to use and to utilize. And, you know, it's a community building project, so we're trying to get people involved and connect different organizations and, you know, just build that sense that we can actually be the media and do more than what is being done and you know, sharpen up on some of these issues that are so crucial that the corporate media really isn't covering properly.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly we can be the media. I mean, we're doing so right now. And it's easy to do, you know. In terms of getting involved, there's a lot of opportunities. There's Mid-Island TV. Also here, CHLY is a great example of folks being able to come in and access the airwaves. Paul, thank you very much. Thank you very much for the overview.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
Take care.
You too. I encourage folks to get involved. Again, you can contact Paul at paul@manlymedia.com. And I do encourage you to be the media. I'll use that segue to say that if anybody wants to get involved with this show, if you have a story about media and either you yourself want to be interviewed or you want to give us a lead, we welcome that. You can get a hold of us by email, bethemedia@viu.ca. Again, that's bethemedia@viu.ca. I'll let you know, too, that we're listening to CHLY 101.7 in Nanaimo. Thank you. And you've been listening to Electric Dreamland from Eric L., who is from Sweden. So, well, we've had a piece on fiction. We've had a good segment on television. Once again, that is the Mid-Island TV. And you can get a hold of Paul Manley at paul@manlymedia.com. Again, manlymedia.com. You're listening to Be The Media. You can contact us at bethemedia@viu.ca. I'd now like to welcome Robin Davies with further excerpts from The Oral Machine.
You are listening to Be The Media on CHLY 101.7 FM.
We are pleased to present further excerpts from The Oral Machine.
We are getting around to the idea of noticing that we have a total environment which is necessarily acoustic.
That you can create that illusion and that suspension of disbelief.
Is this radio? Is this an auditory blog? Is this sound art masquerading as academic discourse? You are listening to further excerpts from the Oral Machine. Oral, the new machine that everyone wants, collapses time and space, you see, so the ear can now be coupled with sound waves from the other side of the world, from the past, and perhaps the future.
Part 7. Who are you? The World Wide Web has made it possible to very quickly assume a new identity and broadcast your views to the world in relative anonymity. Via images and writing, web authors can very convincingly pretend to be someone else. The web medium isn't alone in using this technique. Writers of books hide behind pen names, television personalities wear makeup and costumes, and bad guys use voice distortion when they make phone calls.
I want to play a game.
This time on Further Excerpts from the Oral Machine, we will look into the kind of audio processing we can use to make our voices sound like someone else, or at least sound different enough that no one is likely to recognize us. As a side note, don't try any of the audio techniques mentioned in this program if you have less than honorable motives for doing so. The people on CSI will undoubtedly be able to reverse engineer the recording, and you will be found out. Don't get me started on the improbable high-tech capabilities of the gear on that show. Your narrator through these further excerpts is none other than Alex, the default text-to-speech voice for the current version of the Macintosh computer operating system. This is a really easy way to sound like someone else. Pass your script to a friend. The creator of Further Excerpts prefers to avoid microphones, and good microphones cost money, so a laptop is a quick fix.
In addition, there are numerous text-to-speech software tools available online.
Some of them are called screen readers, and will read in many different languages and with different accents.
Some synthetic voices appear more computer-generated than others.
Which is one reason you might want to start the process with a real person, modifying an existing voice.
Before we get going with the processing techniques, let's hear one piece of Danish wisdom.
Why do you express yourself best at sunset? He pointed toward the sunset sky above the city. Listen, he said. There was no loud or distinct sound. It was an intricate curtain of muffled ringing tones, the city's church bells chiming the sun to rest. The key they are tuned to becomes the tonic in a major or minor triad. An overtone, which is an octave plus a minor or major third, varies along with the tonic. The city is a sound map. Grundtvig Church tuned in D, and above that, the F sharp is heard just as strongly. The church has only the one huge bell. Its chimes could never be confused with those of the Church of Our Saviour. Each is unique in its own way. So, if you talk on the phone at sunset and listen beyond the voice and compensate for the flat sound picture, you get an impression of where the person at the other end is located on the sound map.
This excerpt is taken from The Quiet Girl, a novel by Peter Hoag. The protagonist has incredible hearing and is able to sense the music, key signatures, and melodies of buildings, cities, and even the people he meets. Here, he is discussing how certain times of day have certain benefits when it comes to orally locating someone in a city when you are speaking to them on the phone. In this case, the location of the speaker has much to do with identifying the speaker. All those background sounds, which the microphone hears, have a lot to do with our oral identity. So what are some of the ways we can take a voice recording and change its oral identity? Create this effect the same way we do fast or slow motion in film. If we shoot the scene with the film moving through the camera very slowly, and then play the film back at regular speed, all the actors move as fast as Superman. If we shoot the actors with the film going a little faster than normal, like Peter Jackson did with the elves in The Lord of the Rings, everyone on screen looks a little relaxed at showtime. Listen to this clip to see how it's done. As you can see, speeding up or slowing down playback also affects the amount of time the clip takes to play. We can do more sophisticated pitch shifting, which changes how high or low the voice is, and, ultimately, much of the character of the voice, but keeps the length of time the same. The excerpt from The Chipmunks cannot really be recreated in real time.
We need to make a recording, and then play it back at another speed to hear the results. The kind of pitch shifting you're hearing now can be done, with varying results, in real time. One benefit of this is that you can make live actors,
or yourself, sound like different people at different times in a performance. The trick with this kind of effect is to be subtle.
Subtle differences are harder to notice. The effect is less believable at the extremes. That was the Beastie Boys. The audio processing device used here is called the vocoder. The vocoder takes two audio signals and builds a mashup by mingling them together based on their spectral similarities. Human voices mix well with musical instruments, but less well with whale songs or thunderstorms. One other famous example of vocoder-type processing at play is in this catchy audio clip.
Do you believe in love after love? I can feel something inside me say, I really don't think you're strong enough, no. Do you believe in love after love? I can feel something inside me say, I really don't think you're strong enough, no. No matter how hard I try, you keep pushing me aside and I can't break through. There's no talking to you.
I don't know that Cher has a problem staying in key, but a variation of the vocoder called an autotuner is used in this track. The sound quality of the singer's voice doesn't change, but you can choose which pitch they are singing at any given time, and correct any notes which are a little sharp or flat. Divas become more perfect. On David Bowie's 1995 album, Outside, we can hear some great examples of vocal processing to disguise voices and construct new oral personas.
Testing. This and Grace is my name.
Bowie is no stranger to assumed identities. He once created a character for himself, called Ziggy Stardust, and went on tour with the Spiders from Mars. I won't go into the costumes. On Outside, Bowie, producer Brian Eno, and the other musicians create fictitious new musical personalities, and then jam their way through the album. This is a concept album, so listeners hear the story of Nathan Adler, Baby Grace, and others. Bowie uses audio processing to change his voice, assuming the identity of each character while the story is told.
I was Ramona, a stone. I started with no enemies of my own. I was an artist in a tunnel. But I've been having a midlife crisis. And I've been dreaming of sleep and ape men with metal parts. I've spat upon deeply felt age. I've hid my heart skin and I've ate the honey-colored English. We'll creep together, you and I, for I know all the small friends are.
I am with name. I am with name. I am Ramona Ray Stone. A night fair female. Good timing drone. I am with name. I am with name. I am with name. I am with name. I am Ramona Ray Stone.
And she should say,
twitch and stream, it'll end in chrome. The night of the female good time drone. I am with name. I am Ramona Ray Stone.
She shall say.
I am with name. I am Ramona Ray Stone.
The voice of her bruises and name feels anxiety descending, left at the crossroads between the centuries. Millennium fetish.
I am with name. I am with name. I am Ramona Einstein. I am with name. Fair female, good timing drone. I am with name. I am Ramona Einstein.
Anxiety descending. Anxiety descending.
And hello, folks. You've been listening to Be the Media. Many thanks to Robin Davies for his last segment of Further Excerpts from the Oral Machine. You've been listening to 101.7 FM here in Nanaimo, and it's been yet again another pleasure. Many thanks to Paul Manley, to Kevin Mazutenik, Robin Davies, to Neil Scobie, and I'm Marian Vanderzon. Once again, you're listening to CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. Be the Media is brought to you by the Media Studies Department and the Media Research Lab at BIU.
How does that grab you?